Hello and welcome to the Bloodstream Podcast, a show serving the greater bleeding disorders community, brought to you by Believe Limited and Bloodstream Media, and made possible by our presenting sponsor, Takeda. I am your healthcare advocate, nonprofit nerd, and your host, Amy Board. And today, I am with Flo co-host Jessica Richmond, sitting in for Patrick.
Amy, Bloodstream listeners, I'm so glad to be here. Flowing with you. No, blood streaming with you all.
Oh, God. Blood streaming. Okay. Jess is here because it's Women's History Month. And here on Bloodstream, we celebrate those kinds of things.
Yeah, that's cool of us.
It's cool. Yeah. I like it.
Before we do get into the show, I personally would like to remind you to please speak with a healthcare professional before making any treatment decisions.
So, guys, it's usually my line. Yeah. Okay. On today's show, we have Dr. Glenn Pierce with us. Dr. Pierce is with us to share what to expect from the upcoming WFH Congress in Madrid, which is going to be a fantastic meeting. So we're looking forward to Dr. Pierce being with us. And of course, we have a fantastic interview with President and Chief Executive Officer of the Plasma Protein Therapeutics Association, or the PPTA. Anita Berkman is going to join us. Loved my interview with her, so we'll hear from her a little bit later. And our latest Elite Athletes segment with bleeding disorder community member Ricardo Ramirez. We've got all that and more on this episode of Bloodstream.
Listeners, we know you have a choice in your podcast episodes, and we thank you for listening to Bloodstream. If you like what you hear, please share this episode on social media, subscribe to Bloodstream wherever you listen to podcasts, get involved.
I also want to remind you, dear listeners, that the Bloodstream podcast is made possible by a presenting sponsor, Takeda. That is right, Takeda. Takeda has got this website, bleedingdisorders.com, where you can learn all about Takeda's resources for and commitment to the bleeding disorders community. Takeda believes in a world free of bleeds, and they are dedicated more than ever in their efforts to offer a wide range of programs and support to help patients throughout their treatment journey, wherever on that journey they may be. You can learn more by simply visiting bleedingdisorders.com. One more time, that is bleedingdisorders.com. And for their founding and ongoing support of the Bloodstream podcast, I would just like to say thank you, Takeda.
I want to say it too. Thanks, Takeda.
Ah, and thank you to our segment sponsor, Sanofi, for supporting the Elite Athlete segment, which is coming up. J-Rich, hi.
Hi. I can't believe I'm on Bloodstream.
I know. Thrilling. I am so excited you're on Bloodstream. You're here because we're celebrating Women's History Month, and Patrick is out. And so I was like, we're going to get J-Rich because she's the co-host of Flo. And because it's Women's History Month, we have such a full show, but I did want to ask you, our social media team here at Believe Limited asked really lovely questions for us to kind of like ponder and think about in terms of what Women's History Month means, or, you know, historical figures that might have inspired us. And so I wanted to ask one of the questions to you. If you could collaborate on a project with any woman, living or deceased, who would it be and what would you create together? It's the best question, right?
Wow. Yeah. Great. Let's talk about what we can create together. I'm tempted to say Ani DiFranco because I appreciate her style of revolution, but I really, since they could be dead too, kind of want to call on Ada Lovelace.
I don't even know who that is.
Not to be confused with Linda Lovelace. Ada Lovelace was Lord Byron's daughter, okay, and she essentially was responsible for creating the blueprint of computer code.
What?
Yep. So she knows how to systemize things in a way that's sort of outside of the current human system. So okay, I would love to collaborate with her on some kind of system that could perhaps be new and supportive to humans the way that she did for robots back in the day.
Does she have a biography or something? How do you learn about this?
Oh, I mean, you can Google her. I think it's google.com, and if you type her in, there's something that'll come up on Wikipedia. No, I actually want to tell her story more. I don't think there's a proper biography. I'm sure there's some books, but there's not like any condensed video content about her. She was revolutionary. She was like math.
That.
I love it. Let me figure it out. Let me master it.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
How about you?
Mine was Gilda Radner.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would love to collaborate with Gilda Radner. A, we would be funny, but I would love to, I would love to sit down and collaborate with her and like write a book or like share our story about what it's like to be funny and yet very wildly feminine in a boys club. And like to, you know, engage with the boys club, to have that humor. She had that humor. I have that type of humor. But like she was still so wildly feminine. And I just think that would be interesting.
Even if you don't get to collaborate with her, could you write that book anyway?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, great.
Okay, great. Well, happy Women's History Month to all that celebrate. We're still in the month of March, so happy Bleeding Disorders Awareness Month as well.
Yes, absolutely.
And speaking of, our first guest actually is Bloodstream legend. We love, we've had him on several times. Dr. Glenn Pierce is going to be with us. And Dr. Pierce stopped by to share a little bit about what's upcoming at the WFH Congress in Madrid, of course. WFH is the World Federation of Hemophilia. Their Congress is every other year. And it's a big international conference. A lot of scientific minds there, but a lot of international global community members also attend this meeting. And so Glenn, of course, is works with WFH, has for a long time. And so he was here to kind of share a little bit about what we can expect.
How amazing. Here's to global connection.
Heck yes. So take it away, Dr. Pierce. Listeners, I am here with Dr. Glenn Pierce, one of my favorites, who's going to give us kind of an overview of what WFH Congress is going to look like this year in Madrid. Glenn, welcome back to the podcast, as always, my friend.
Good to be here, Amy. Thank you very much for having me and for giving me an opportunity to talk about the WFH, the World Federation of Hemophilia Congress, that's going to be in Madrid in late April. A Congress that we run in full-blown form every 2 years and is really a chance for the world community to get together, not only the patients, patient advocates, but all of the range of healthcare providers, regulators, and payers, as well as industry, come together to under one tent to have a chance to exchange a lot of information. So really very educational, not only from the sessions, but from the hallways, running into people, having a chance to understand culturally where they're coming from, what life is like in this country or that country if you've got a bleeding disorder. So I went to my first one back in 1990 when it was in Washington, D.C., and really I'll never forget the kinds of people that I met and the stories that they had to tell, many of which were heartbreaking, because for us living in the 15% of the world, having access to a variety of state-of-the-art therapies, that is not the case for the 85%. And so a significant part of the conference really does focus on all of the therapies, including the ones that are more limited in the rest of the world. And that's important. It's important for awareness. It's important for us to understand how we can continue to advocate for health equity. That's really what it's all about.
Mm. Glenn, from your vantage point, what are some of the highlights that Congress is going to have here in Madrid?
Well, it's just a few days long, but it is contains 90 hours of educational sessions. Some are simultaneous. We've got 75 sessions that are spread across 8 different tracks, lots of workshops, 7 plenary sessions where everybody comes together. And then 52 educational sessions, 10 free paper sessions, and 3 late-breaking abstract new technology sessions to talk about some of the latest results and what's next. We've got about probably over 250 people from 53 countries that are coming in to talk and exchange information. We have basically 2 main tracks, a medical track that is medical and scientific in nature, talking about treatments, healthcare, and the management of bleeding disorders. And then we've got a people with bleeding disorders track that talk about more comprehensively living with bleeding disorders, outcomes, and how to succeed in gaining access to therapies. We then also have 6 professional tracks for our professional members, in addition to the medical tracks. So lab track, nurses track, musculoskeletal track, psychosocial, women and girls with bleeding disorders track, and a dental track. So a little something for everyone at this conference. We also, the day before the conference starts on Sunday, we have workshops. And the workshops really focus on our humanitarian aid program, our blood safety availability, coagulation product safety, availability, and supply activities, and then our data and demographics, our research programs, and how they go about collecting data, and of course, what the data show.
Glenn, something that jumped out to me here on the agenda is that plenary on safety.
Yeah.
And I just wondered, what was the genesis of that? What is that session going to be about? It says, aims to empower the community to take proactive measures to ensure that we learn from past experiences and advocate for safety in bleeding disorder care, which I know is important, but it just seems like it hasn't been like a topic, you know, well, at Congress or meetings lately.
Well, that's exactly why we decided to do it as a plenary. Now, on Sunday, our coagulation product safety, supply, and availability committee will have a several hours on some of the details of safety, as we always do, but it also talks about availability and supply, and affordability, which is very important too. But when you think about where we are today and the range of products that are available, safety no longer fits into one little box. So if you go back 25, 30 years, we had plasma-derived products, actually up to 30 years ago. That's all we had was plasma-derived concentrates. And safety could be well categorized, concern about inhibitors, concern about viruses. And so now we fast forward 30 years, and we have a variety of different therapies, as we all know. And the key thing about drugs is that it doesn't matter who we are, what illnesses we may have. For every drug, there is a benefit and there is a risk. And so there are consequences for all of us when we take drugs, and we need to understand what those consequences are. This feeds into informed decision-making, shared decision-making tools to really understand. And as we look at our landscape today, it's way beyond plasma-derived factor 8 and factor 9. It's way beyond recombinant factors. We're dealing with monoclonal antibodies in a variety of forms that either can mimic factor 8 or rebalance the coagulation system. We're looking at RNA molecules that can rebalance the coagulation system. And then we're looking at gene therapy, a completely different set of benefits and risks associated with this kind of technology. And so putting it all under one roof and having a plenary on safety helps us at a 100,000-foot level or 100,000-meter level to really look at safety as a whole within the bleeding disorders community. And as I mentioned, feeding right into informed and shared decision-making. Patients need to take responsibility for not only looking for the efficacy, which is very important, but for looking at the safety. So what's the risk associated with the benefit? And that's why we've turned it into a plenary, to really draw attention to the need for all of us to take even more responsibility, because it's gotten more complicated.
Glenn, tell me about the medical track. What are you clinical nerds going to be nerding out about at Congress? That's our favorite topic here on Bloodstream, is what the clinicians are nerding out on.
Yeah. Well, I alluded to it. The benefit risk is an important one. And so you can break that down and look at the various benefits of many of the treatments that are available or in clinical trials. And then you can look at the risks that are associated. So this provides us with an opportunity in the medical track to look at things in much more detail and with the latest information as well. Because even though clinical trials for some may be over, post-marketing studies are still ongoing. Data are still being collected for these new technologies. And that's important for us to stay abreast of what comes out from real-world data, as well as what comes out from additional clinical studies, even after products are approved. So there'll be a lot of that. There also will be a focus on on new technologies. And so what's coming? For instance, for gene therapy, it looks like we may have some long-term curative-like effects for factor IX. We'll see. But so far, the data are looking good. But for factor VIII, it's not so clear that we have either long-term benefit or that it's necessarily curative for many patients. And so understanding what the limitations are is important as we make our way toward getting to curative therapies. The goal here is to cure bleeding disorders. It's not more treatments necessarily, although we need more treatments along the way, but it's to cure bleeding disorders. How are we going to get there? How are we going to get there for factor VIII, factor IX, for von Willebrand disease, and then for the more rare coagulation factor deficiencies? So there'll be some discussion on that as well at the World Congress.
What's the community patient track like at Congress? How does it differ from like BDC or something here in the States?
Well, BDC is terrific and, of course, offers a tremendous amount of programming. But the programming is really focused on the 15% of the world that has access to all of the products. The bleeding disorders, the people with bleeding disorders track at the world is much broader. So it not only focuses on the 15%, but it focuses on the other 85% as well. And so if you have limited resources, if you have limited availability or access to products, what can you do? How can you maximize the use of those products most efficiently? How can you minimize the bleeding that occurs? How can you best control the bleeding if you don't have the most optimal therapies available? And so there's a lot of thought and effort does go into that from the medical and healthcare provider community. And that's important to exchange that kind of information. How do you treat complex kinds of bleeding episodes that we don't see and we haven't seen here for 30 years? Things like pseudotumors that form large collections of blood that don't go away and can wind up destroying a limb and potentially killing a person. Or other kinds of bleeding that really leaves a tremendous amount of sequelae because the bleeding is more uncontrolled. Key thing with bleeding is to prevent it, and if you can't prevent it, it's to stop it right away. Yeah. Well, that doesn't really happen in most of the world. We don't prevent it, and patients are often way too far away from getting any sort of treatment to stop it right away. So by the time they can get access to treatment, assuming some is available, that has turned into a full-blown major bleed that takes, as we may remember from years past, weeks to resolve. I remember that from my childhood. Weeks and weeks all of that blood to be eliminated. So that is what happens. And there are best practices for managing patients. And those are important to exchange because they literally can save lives.
Glenn, thank you for being here, as always. Just wanted to give you one last shout out. Is there anything else that we should mention when it comes to Congress? I'm very excited about it, by the way. It's going to be in Madrid. Bloodstream listeners, Patrick and I are going, so we'll do our on the ground, you know, nerdy reporting as we're there. We can't wait. But anything else before we close?
Well, I've been to Madrid a couple of times on business and had opportunities to get to some of the museums. It's impressive. There's a lot of Spanish artists that are very well known, besides Picasso, of course, and their museums are filled with those. But I think from the perspective of the Congress itself, the most important thing is to just take it all in and don't be afraid to talk to a stranger and find out who they are, what they're doing, how they cope, how they manage. Because it's a fascinating cut across humanity. And whether you're fortunate enough to have access to the latest and greatest, or you only have access to something that's been around for 30 or 40 years, people cope. and they all cope in their own individual way. And understanding that gives you a perspective that is really important as we think about ourselves as citizens in this global community.
Dr. Glenn Pierce, thank you for joining us as always. Please tell your wife I said hi, and I'll see you in Madrid.
All right, Amy. Great to talk to you again, as usual.
Bloodstream listeners, next up, my fantastic interview with President and CEO of the Plasma Protein Therapeutics Association, Anita Berkman, is next. Check it out. Y'all, I am here with President and Chief Executive Officer of the Plasma Protein Therapeutics Association, or the PPTA, Anita Berkman. Anita, hello. Welcome to the podcast.
Amy, thank you for having me. Great to be speaking with you today.
Well, tell me a little bit about the organization. What's the mission? What y'all do?
Well, so it is a global organization. So we have got members that are active in very many different parts of the world. But basically, PPTA is a healthcare trade association that represents the manufacturers of what are called plasma-derived therapies, as well as the collectors of human plasma that is so needed to create these therapies for rare disease patients around the world. Our mission is really to raise awareness about the need for plasma donation, how it is so important for these plasma-derived therapies to increase patient access to these therapies, which can vary around the world, and to increase the availability of high-quality plasma, so much of which is needed as it goes through this manufacturing process called fractionation to create these therapies.
I think there is a subset of our listeners that could see the tie-in to hemophilia and bleeding disorders really
Absolutely.
Nicely, but there might be a few that are a little bit confused about why we would have you on the show. Tell me a little bit about how bleeding disorders, hemophilia in particular, kind of factors into your work.
So we are very closely committed and tied to this community. In fact, I can say one of the first things that I did in joining PPTA was go to the Bleeding Disorders Conference here outside of Washington, D.C. One of my first things that I did, meeting so many of these patients. So these therapies I was talking about, plasma contains these very special proteins and antibodies that people who have genetic rare disorders need. Some of them are primary immune deficiencies. That is a lot of what plasma-derived therapies are used for. Others are neurological conditions. But these proteins are also valuable for coagulation factors, hemophilia A, hemophilia B, and von Willebrand disease in particular. While I understand that many in the bleeding disorders community have been able to move away from a reliance on plasma-derived therapies, that is not the case in many parts of the world, in lesser developed nations. And it certainly is very clear to me that von Willebrand disease patients do rely on plasma-derived therapies. So we have had a long history with the bleeding disorders community that I am very committed to continuing.
This might be the majority of your job, but how committed and what is the daily interaction with maybe regulatory agencies here in the States and globally about blood safety and the plasma in general in terms of like blood-borne diseases like HIV?
Absolutely. And of course, that has been such a concern, as we know, with the tragic history for the bleeding disorders community. And in fact, some of the issues that evolved from the AIDS epidemic and the devastating impact on the bleeding disorders community led to the formation of PPTA. It also informed the standards that we uphold. PPTA administers standards and programs that go above and beyond what regulators require to have the utmost quality and safety for the plasma donation process and the manufacturing process that can now remove these blood-borne viruses tremendously effectively. It has been decades since there has been a transmission, but those standards and getting the industry to that place have been part of that journey. And that is why we have listened to and been partnering with the blood disorders community now for years. We have regular interactions with the Food and Drug Administration, with the European Medicines Agency in the EU. where safety and quality are always paramount. In addition, we actually advocate with our patient organization partners on Capitol Hill and in the states as far as access to therapies and the unique nature of plasma-derived therapies and how they're different than other pharmaceuticals. Human plasma, it's a finite resource. Plasma cannot be manufactured in a lab. So we rely on plasma donation, which is so important and vital here in the United States for the creation of these therapies. But if our regulators, if our lawmakers don't understand that unique nature of this sector, it can eventually be a detriment to patients.
Mm. Anita, tell me about some other disorders, diseases that utilize plasma-derived products.
So I mentioned primary immune deficiency, and there are many primary immune deficiencies. And these are children who are born with a very compromised or non-functioning immune system. So without plasma-derived therapies, the immunoglobulins that come out through the fractionation process, they get one infection after another, and it can be completely debilitating to their lives. Mm. There are other liver or lung diseases. I'm thinking of alpha-1, another genetically inherited issue where without the plasma-derived therapies, there can be a deterioration. And we're not just talking about life-saving here. We're talking about life-improving in so many ways. The other thing is that there are many other indications for plasma-derived therapies that people know less about. There's a growing area of what's called secondary immune deficiency. So if you're going through cancer treatment, obviously the treatments to fight the cancer are devastating to the immune system. So plasma-derived therapies can help bolster that for the cancer patient. Plasma-derived therapies are also used in shock trauma to treat burn victims, rabies, tetanus. There are so many different uses. And there is even a type of therapy for a blood incompatibility, Rh incompatibility between a mother and her unborn child, where the antibodies in the mother's blood recognize that of the unborn baby or fetus as foreign and can start attacking. But with one injection, this one anti-D injection, that cascading process can be stopped. And the baby has a much better chance of being born healthy. So there are, while many of the uses of plasma-derived therapies are for rare conditions, when you look at it holistically, we're talking about a lot of people who rely on them.
Mm. Anita, we love executives on this show. And I do have to say, we love a lady executive on this show, lady to lady.
Hello.
So tell me a little bit, tell our listeners a little bit about you. How'd you get into this?
So I have a long history in healthcare, but it's kind of a unique history, I would say. I actually penned an article a few weeks ago called From the Newsroom to the Boardroom, because where I started was actually as a healthcare journalist for many years, really focused on medical breakthroughs, a lot of work with rare disease patients, the need for orphan drug promotion, all those kinds of things. I worked in Philadelphia and in Washington, D.C. as a medical journalist. But at one juncture in my career, I realized I wanted to do more than report on the breakthroughs, but be part of mission-driven organizations that help advance patient care and also self-care. Knowledge around healthcare, ownership of one's healthcare decisions, which I can imagine many of your listeners facing with, you know, whether it's insurance issues and going through the red tape of getting treatments approved, all those kinds of things. It can be a very complex place. And I think an informed medical consumer is so important. But once I left journalism, I joined two different healthcare associations, the first one in hospice and palliative care. So very much focused on end-of-life care and how to make it more accessible and acceptable to patients and their families to transition at the end of life. Right. My second healthcare association was focused on non-prescription medicines and dietary supplements, all those things you find in the drugstore when you walk in. So self-care focus. So less of a focus on a patient, but on a consumer. But I will say, as I enjoyed my time at that association very much, I missed the direct-to-patient connection that I had previously had with the hospice organization. PPTA is wonderfully unique in that one of the first things the board of directors told me when I was hired is that one of your jobs, day one, is to make important, lasting, and authentic relationships with our patient organizations. They are the ones who matter. They are, and we are here. You are with us every time we go on Capitol Hill. Your stories are in all of our publicity on media. It is focused on the patients who need these therapies because there is no stronger message than that. And I am thrilled to be leading this organization that has these ties to patients, not just here in the United States, but on the international level. I was just at the International Plus Conference of Patient Organizations with hemophilia patients front and center represented there, and PPTA is at the table as well. And I couldn't be more proud of that.
Oh my gosh. As like a nonprofit nerd, that just like makes my heart soar. That's so great. That kind of leads me.
I'm a fellow nonprofit nerd.
Yes. We love. This has just been lovely and really informative, and I'm very excited, hopefully maybe, to have you back on the show so we can learn a little bit more about the partnerships that you're making, kind of the where the organization is going. To final question, you know, like the biggest question we ask, what are the priorities of the organization this year and kind of in the next three as you're kind of looking towards your strategic plans and things?
Absolutely. So we really work around three pillars. One is education and awareness. Plasma donation is nowhere nearly as well recognized as blood donation. Mm. And we need more people to consider donating plasma. It takes 1,200 donations of plasma to treat one hemophilia patient for a year. Because through this fractionation process, you need so much of this plasma pool together to distill those critical proteins and antibodies we talked about. So it's education awareness about what is plasma donation, why is it so important, who is waiting on the other end, those patients who need these plasma-derived therapies. We also want to increase availability of access to the plasma that we need, both here in the U.S., in Europe, and around the world. And, you know, we want to increase patient access to plasma therapies. That's what we advocate for, and that these are unique therapies. They're not necessarily interchangeable, and they're different from other pharmaceuticals, and that they need to be looked at differently by regulators and lawmakers. So those are our key priorities. But it continually goes back to what I see is what's new in the PPTA logo, which is the P and the D. It's the connection between the patient and the donor. And that interconnection of one person's gift leading to a better life for another person. I think that's at the core of what we're about at PPTA. And I hope we can continue to do more with the bleeding disorders community and our other patient groups as we do even greater things together.
Oh, Anita, that's great. Will we see you at the Bleeding Disorders Conference this year? Or do you have other travel plans?
Of course.
Yes!
I will be there, and I look forward to meeting you and some of your listeners. And really, just thrilled to be on the show today. And I just
want to say thank you.
Absolutely. Right back at you. Thank you, Anita, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Anita J. Rich. My favorite thing about her is that she is totally a lady CEO. We love lady CEOs.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, it's so interesting, too. At International Women's Day, it's important that we don't just have women in the forefront of systems that have been created by men. However,
yes,
it's essential that we have women like her who are leading the way.
100%.
On those systems that have been created by men as CEOs. Let's 100%. See more. Yeah.
And one thing that I loved about her is that she was so relational focused. You know, so much of her job is relational. And, you know, what it just... I don't know. She was just lovely. I remember, to be completely honest, I remember coming into this interview, you know, I didn't know her. I didn't know the work of the organization. And when you like leave that, when I left the interview, I was like, this is really lovely. It has such a wonderful connection to the bleeding disorder community that we don't talk about. And I just really liked her. She's very engaged with our community. She'll be at BDC for those of you who go to BDC here in September. So anyway, hats off to Anita. I thought she was super cool.
Here, here,
here, here. So let's get over to our latest Elite Athletes segment. This next segment is going to be with bleeding disorder community member Ricardo Ramirez. We can't wait to hear his story. As a reminder, listener, Sanofi seeks to expand the idea of what's possible for the hemophilia community, take a deeper look at the science behind hemophilia and an important connection between factor activity levels and potential activities at levelsmatter.com. And now let's hear from Ricardo.
Today on Redefining Impossible, the podcast, we're venturing into the world of ultramarathons, a realm where endurance is king, and every mile is a story of sheer determination. We're joining Ricardo Ramirez, a 52-year-old ultramarathon runner with severe hemophilia B, whose story rewrites the narrative of what's possible in the face of seemingly insurmountable odds. Ricardo's journey in ultramarathons began not with grand ambitions, but with a simple invitation from a friend, a suggestion that he try his hand at something extraordinary. Hemophilia severity is determined by factor activity levels, a measurement of how much factor you have in your blood at the time of diagnosis. The more factor you have in your body over time, the better your bleed protection is, which is why many people with hemophilia choose to treat prophylactically. Your doctor can perform measurements to evaluate the factor activity levels in your blood. Learn more about the importance of factor activity levels by talking to your doctor and visiting levelsmatter.com. Imagine stepping into the world of ultramarathons, a realm where endurance is not just a physical attribute, but a deep-seated resolve carved into the very soul of its participants. Ultramarathons are not mere races. They're epic journeys stretching beyond the conventional marathon distance, often traversing 50 kilometers, 100 kilometers, or even more, through treacherous terrains and against the unyielding march of time. These grueling tests of human endurance take runners through lonely trails, over towering mountains, across arid deserts, and deep into the heart of nature's most challenging landscapes. Every step is a dance with the limits of human potential, a relentless pursuit of what lies at the edge of possibility. In the world of ultramarathons, it's not just about the distance covered, but the stories of resilience, determination, and the unbreakable human spirit that are written within each stride.
I'm Ricardo Ramirez, 52 years old, with hemophilia B, severe. So I was running just a short distance, like a half marathon, marathons, and one of my friends, he invited me for a race. Oh, you know what, you can race really good on an ultra marathon. So I tried first in a 50K. So in that race, I finished in first place.
His voice carries the quiet confidence of a man who discovered an unexpected talent and passion. But Ricardo's path is not just about the physical act of running. It's a delicate balance with managing his hemophilia.
I start my races or my training, my long runs, the day before to infuse in my factor 9 the day before, or even the same day in the morning before I start. And yeah, I go for my long runs, and after my run, depends how I feel it. If I have some bruises or, I use another infusion.
Every race, every training session for Ricardo is a meticulous calculation, a strategy carefully crafted to ensure his health and performance are in perfect harmony. Among his many challenges, the Badwater 135 stands out. A grueling race, known as one of the hardest around the globe. Not just for the distance, but for its extreme conditions.
The famous Badwater, 135 miles. For that race, I was running around 80 to 100 miles a week. It's one of the other races, the hardest race around the globe is Badwater 135. It's not about the miles, it's about the weather. The heat. I remember my wife, she showed me a picture. She took in the car. It's at 130 degrees at 10 p.m. I think that is a race. It's more tough for me.
Ricardo's story in ultra marathons is not just a physical endeavor, it's a mental battle, a testament to that indomitable spirit we've seen in all the elite athletes we've interviewed for Redefining Impossible, the podcast.
You know what? For me, all the time I told all the people, all these kind of races is mental, 80% mental. When I signed for that race, the Badwater 135, when I hear my name, oh, you are in the race. At that moment, I'm going to finish that race. I see me crossing the finish line many times because mental, I was prepared.
His philosophy transcends running. It's a lesson in life about the power of mental fortitude and visualization. Ricardo doesn't run these races alone. His journey is supported and made possible by a vital support system.
During the races, we have 8 stations. Every 7 miles or depends where the aid station, and I can have support there. Most of my wife, all the time, she support me. She waiting for me in those aid station, and all the time I have my factor with her, just in case I need it.
Behind Ricardo's every stride is a story of community, love, and unwavering support, embodying the true spirit of endurance sports.
You know what? I try to show that people with hemophilia, we can do things, extreme their sports, or yeah, whatever we want to do. If we had a treatment, we can do whatever we want, illustrated with a factor.
Ricardo Ramirez's journey is not just an athletic feat. It's a beacon of hope and inspiration, showing that with the right management, support, and sheer will, even the most daunting of challenges can be conquered. This has been Redefining Impossible, the podcast, where we bring you stories of extraordinary resilience, one ultra marathon at a time. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Redefining Impossible, the podcast. Don't forget to watch the film Redefining Impossible for free at eliteathleteswithhemophilia.com. And thanks once again to Sanofi for sponsoring this segment. I'm Keith Korneluk, and I'll talk to you next month on Redefining Impossible, the podcast, only on Bloodstream.
Sanofi aims to raise the bar for the patients living with hemophilia. Reimagine what's possible by visiting rareblooddisorders.com to hear more about Sanofi's dedication to the bleeding disorders community.
Well, we done did it!
Way more.
I know. We done did it. We crushed. Okay. I want to thank Dr. Glenn Pierce, as always, Anita Berkman, and Ricardo Ramirez, and of course, Jessica Richmond for contributing today's episode. Thank you so much for being here. You like made my whole day. And of course, this whole thing would not be possible without our presenting sponsor, Takeda. Visit bleedingdisorders.com to learn more. And thanks again to Sanofi for their support of the Elite Athletes segment.
Amy, what do we have coming up in our next episode?
Jerich, I'm not going to lie. I'm very excited. NBDF has a brand new CEO, Phil Gattone, and he's going to be with us on the next Bloodstream.
Okay.
So we get to learn all about Phil. I've heard very good things from people that are hard to please.
Oh.
I think that was my biggest thing. I went to Washington Days earlier this month, and the rumor on the street was that he impressed people that were very hard to impress. So I can't wait.
That is a great, disclaimer? What do we call that? A trailer of who
100%.
You are to come? Yeah, great.
It was like a great, so anyway, I have not spoken to him yet, dear listener, so with that, but anyway. And that is all for this episode. Be sure to subscribe to Bloodstream Podcast wherever you listen and to have that next episode delivered right to you at the moment when it drops.
Hello, loyal listeners. As always, also remember mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com is the email to use to inquire about Bloodstream Media and Believe Limited casting opportunities. Or you can find me. You, Patrick, Lynch, or anyone on social media, Bloodstream Media, it's all on social media. That's the social media that you find on your phone or online. Social media, ain't it great? Maybe, yeah. Maybe we should keep using social media.
50-50.
Okay.
But love it for the connection. Love it for the connection. Okay. And I must give a shout out to Flo. Our next episode, what's the next episode of Flow next week? Nope, not next week. April. What's
April? Oh, April, we have Miriam, a wonderful licensed certified therapist with us. Oh, just check it out. Flow with us. We also really want to collect period stories. So Bloodstream listeners, if you have a story of menstruation, extreme menstruation that you would like to share, please check out the show notes. We'll add the Calendly link to here, can we? Great, you'll find it here. Talk to us. Flow with us. Thank you.
All right, everybody. I'm your host, Amy Board.
And I'm your lady person friend, Jessica Richmond.
Until next time, take self-care of yourself, everybody. Bye-bye.